Michael Parker is hopping on. Oh, Soccer in the Streets shirt. Very, very nice.
That's right.
There you go. This we were talking about the soccer tournament, TST. Yes. Uh-huh. As a sports scene. Now he's all over the place. Were you invited to participate in this? Did you get a knock on the door? Hey, Parky, do you want to get in on this thing?
I was invited by three different teams. All of which I said, thank you, but no, thank you. yeah, I mean, I wish that I could have participated because it looks like it's like a real deal tournament.
Uh-huh.
But that's why I said no, because it is a real deal tournament. And I'm not silly enough to think that I could just show up there without having kicked a soccer ball in about a year and get through 3 days of playing soccer without getting injured. And no part of me thought the risk was worth the reward.
I mean, you look at that stuff and it's like I said, it's like outdoor indoor soccer is the best way that I can describe it. I mean, it is rapid fire. You've got to be your head's got to be on a swivel. There's a lot of artists out there. I mean, Wando is playing in net and scoring while he's wearing the keeper gear. I mean, this thing is absolutely bananas, and I don't know all the rule changes. So for me, it's hard to keep up with it, but it looks like it's absolutely crazy for a winner take all $1 million.
It does. And then that's what they expect. I'm sure that's what they expected. That's what they wanted, right? To put chaos in front of fans, and makes it interesting. And I will tune in a little bit if I can this weekend to see how, the games go. And, it's awesome. It's on TV and it's being covered. I know The Athletic is down there. I mean, this thing's getting coverage. So it's awesome. But yeah, I just didn't think my shoulder was going to come back in one piece. So I was like, that's going to affect my workers' comp in the future. So
especially on turf surfaces and with it being rainy and wet yesterday and being all kinds of nasty, you hit the turf and that shoulder hits at a goofy angle. And then you're a wing down and it is not pretty for the remainder of that match or for the rest of the weekend.
Totally. So, I mean, I do give a lot of credit to the guys that do go out there that have been retired for a little bit and play because, they must be, I know Wando's, I think, still involved with San Jose. So he's probably training with them, kicking the ball around every now and then. But, yeah.
I'm right there with you. I'll watch it. I'll sit there and try to keep up with it. I have no earthly idea about all the rules and the rule changes and everything. And it's like, okay, I don't know what you're doing. Looks cool. I'll watch. And that's kind of basically what I was thinking. Yesterday in Major League Soccer, we had another sacking down in Miami. And there are a couple of different elements that I wanted to get into and how it applies to younger athletes and things. Now that Coach Neville is out at Inter Miami, are front offices acting faster or more quickly when it comes to knee-jerk reactions? Is there less patience, do you think, when it comes to front offices these days when it comes to coaches? And what have you done for me lately-ism?
Yes, I do think so. And I think that to a certain point, it's good because I think that in the past, it was too long of a leash. Like guys, hanging on for a long time where it's like you hear these things and you're like, God, how is he still there? Type situations. But I hope it never becomes like England. Yeah. I mean, Leeds United is a perfect example this year of just like freaking out. And
they hung Jesse out to dry. I'll say that.
Rash decisions and spending useless money firing coaches and stuff. I just read this morning that it was Allardyce, right? That finished the season there?
Yeah, it was.
500,000 pounds for four games, three losses and a draw. Mm-hmm. Thanks. And here's your $500,000 pounds. it's like, what are you guys doing? So I hope we never get to that aspect where it's like, you know, you go on a bad run over a couple months and you get fired. I honestly was a little bit surprised about Neville just because of his relationship with Beckham, and he's been dealt a tough hand. Like, I know that they've spent money, right? But Higuain was a disaster, right? I mean, his relationship was with Pizarro was, I mean, I know nothing about it. Just watching on TV, I can tell those guys freaking hated each other and never played well together. So that was a disaster. And he's got no say in those big signings at all. You know, they ship Pizarro out, you know, they have all this off-season stuff, right? It's like, man, I feel bad for the guy because it's been a disaster down there from the beginning, and he's done okay with the team. You know, they've had a huge turnaround this off-season roster-wise, and, you know, I know that they're not where they want to be right now, but geez. I was a bit surprised.
Well, and you end up in a situation where, you know, you try to have seven DPs on a roster, and it's like, no, he's a TAM guy. And you end up with all of these violations. You can't do anything with transfer bans, and you end up with Chris Henderson coming in. There's like two dozen players worth of turnover, and I would have thought there would have been more patience. And the reason that I wanted to bring that in was, have you been in a situation or known, obviously you'd know players who were, have you been in a situation where you've had a coaching change mid-season, and how do older players versus younger players take that information and try to work forward knowing that you still have a lot left in a season? What's it like in a coaching change for a younger player and an older player?
Crazy enough, 15 years, never a coaching change.
Really?
Yep.
And I mean, that in and of itself speaks to your fantastic choices when it comes to stability and wanting to have things going on in soccer. But I mean, I would imagine that you have conversations with buddies who are in coaching changes, and you can sit there and look at it from afar and go, you know, damn, man. I mean, that's having to readjust mid-season or something like that. I mean, obviously that would test both a young and an old player mentally when it comes to these kinds of things.
Totally. And, you know, for some guys, when that occurs, it's a blessing because, you know, the previous coach just didn't fancy you for whatever reason. Right. And so now you've got a new opportunity to show yourself to a brand new coach and maybe change things for you personally. But it also gives a lift to guys maybe that have been a little complacent in their position. And it's like, okay, I got to prove myself again and make sure I earn this spot that I have. So I think that's why when you have a coaching change, you kind of see a little bit of a bump in the beginning because everyone's got this like, oh shoot, I need to prove to the new coaching staff my worth. And, you know, that leads to sometimes some better performances in the short term.
Yeah. And the reason I bring that up for younger players is because you mentioned having to prove yourself all over again. And the new coach may view you one way or the other versus how the older coach does. And I would imagine that there's a little bit of mental whiplash if you're a younger player to try to sit there and it's like, okay, how do I, you know, reorient myself here? I mean, it's just, it's like I said, that's just me staring at it from a press box level. I would think that it's more difficult on younger players, even though they could be given that extra opportunity now.
Yeah, totally. And I think some of that just becomes you're not used to it. You're not used to the business side of soccer. And, you know, you, all of a sudden you're playing one formation and learning how to do that and playing one position. And now you have a new coach comes in and thinks, oh, no, you shouldn't play left wing. You should be a 10 or vice versa. Or you should be an outside back or, you know, oh, we're going to switch from, you know, high pressing to sitting back. And now you're stuck in between two minds of how to play and those types of things. That's where the challenge comes in, I think, for younger players. And you know, it's always adapting, right? You're always adapting to what's in front of you. And that's key, being able to have that growth mindset of like, okay, what does the situation call for now?
Are younger players in this current generation, are they better at adapting on the fly than the other generations that you've been attached to when it comes to playing and monitoring the sport?
I don't think so, honestly. And I think that's some of the research going into soccer right now is tactically we've grown a lot as a country, right? Like when I first started in MLS, like every team played almost the same formation. The tactics were basically the same, right? And then I went to Denmark, and it was so different, right? You had teams sitting in, you had teams high pressing, teams playing for set pieces, and it was just so different. And now I think, the US is much more like that, right? We've tactically grown a lot, and now younger players at a younger age are learning the tactics of different styles of play. But there's also sometimes where we're losing that ability to freestyle out there, right? And figure things out on your own, right? Without a coach having to tell you, hey, they're playing this formation. That means you need to do this and do that, right? And it's like, okay, can you as a player realize when you can figure things out, and on the fly and adjust and do things differently and have that creativeness where it's like, okay, we're still able to do some one-on-one stuff and have some fun in the attacking third, right? Or it's not like we don't have to play like robots and do this and pass here and everything's structured. So yeah, that fine line of like learning the tactics but creating that area where there's still room for that individual ness to come out in players.
Why do you think that is, where everything you don't get the chance to experience the idea to think more freely? I mean, why do you think we're missing out on stuff like that?
Yeah, because I think sometimes we value the team player so much where it's like, okay, we can't have that dribbling. And also it's like even like I read an article about Diego Luna, who is an under 20 star for our national team right now, playing over, in the 20 World Cup, and he's struggling at Salt Lake to play games. And that some of it is because he's such a unique player. He's so different than the normal player because he's got this creative mind and he needs a system and a coach and an ability to be able to play more freely and less robotic of like, okay, I do this, I do that, here's this, I do that, right? Where, and obviously with his current national team, right, he's got that because he's been one of the best players for the US, and he's probably going to be sold at some point for a ton of money to Europe, maybe even without most MLS fans knowing who he is. So I don't know. It's definitely because coaches have grown, and that's great. We're getting better coaches at a younger age, but they also think they need to have a huge influence on the way that teams play sometimes. I mean, I remember seeing my son play like an under eight game, and like the coach had the kids like sitting back at midfield and then like counterattacking, and they were very, very organized. But at the same time, I was like, man, like, I don't know. You kind of want to let the kids play and figure some things out on their own, versus like telling them exactly how to play all the time.
Yeah, I mean, Diego Luna, first exposure I had with him was when he was with El Paso in USL Championship. And when you get that kind of a three-dimensional thinker, you can kind of sit there and you can see that he's got a different view on the game, man. I mean, it's really cool to see an artist like that be able to paint on that kind of a canvas. And then you get pinned into paint by numbers at RSL. And everybody sits there and wonders, well, oh, well, they paid this much for this guy. And it's disappointing at times when you know that there's someone who can do really well as an artist, but they're stuck in that paint by numbers scheme.
Yeah, totally. And that's why not everybody is made for every team, right? It's like some guys find a place where it works for them really well. And that might be because they need a system and they're a system player and that's great and it works for them and they're in a great spot. And for other players, they need that freedom. They need a coach that's a little bit less of the tactics. And that's, I think, where coaches like, Bruce Arena, and even Caleb Porter, where it's like I've heard that, okay, these guys aren't, the tactical minds that like Greg Berhalter is, but there's also something said for their players, like having that ability to kind of do their own thing out there, that works if you're able to find those players.
Do you think, and this might be a loaded question, do you, or maybe this is a why do you think coaches feel compelled with players at a younger level, like the U8 that you saw, like the U10s and U12s? Why do you think coaches seem to be predisposed more often than not to try to have something structured like that counter-pressing element that you saw with your son, instead of just letting folks go out and play? Why do you think folks, coaches seem to be locked into that notion of, well, they have to have structure? I mean, is that basically it? Everything is structured. We have to have structure. I mean, is it that simple?
Yeah, and I don't know, like I'm no expert at youth soccer and knowing when that shift occurs, right? But I just know, like, at a younger age, to develop that mindset yourself so that you're understanding the game a little bit more is nice and I think important. But yeah, of course, at some point you need to learn the different ways to play and some idea of tactics, right? But there's also understanding stuff and knowing it versus like this is what you have to do here and have to do there. So there's flexibility within the tactics and that understanding. And that's, I'm sure, difficult for coaches, right? Because you want, it's nice to see a team that's structured and knows how to play and knows what they want to do, right? But and this goes back to a conversation we've had a long time ago of like parents and even youth coaches of like, okay, this game we have to win. We have to win this game and this game and this game, right? Every game is the most important game we have to win, right? And that's why you get these crazy parents yelling out the sideline, right? But what they don't understand is like, okay, sometimes if you figure stuff out and it costs you a loss in that game, right? But these kids are learning these things and learning these lessons, right? That's more valuable in the long run. So yeah, there's definitely a balance.
Michael Parker's Freddie Free Kick with our friends at Beyond Goals Mentoring at BG Mentoring on the Twitters, at MF Parkhurst on the Twitters. So then let me ask you this: when it comes to you and your mentees at Beyond Goals, do you run into situations where you have to remind mentees it's okay to think, you can have an imagination, it's cool to sit there and think about things differently than just rigid structures? Do you have to remind them to either have fun or to think and enjoy more than you might have in the past?
Yeah, I've got one mentee in particular, and he's a little bit older, who is struggling with a coach who tactically doesn't understand the game a little bit and wants them to play a certain way, and it's not bringing the best out in him. And I have these conversations with him of, yeah, you have to understand how can you play your game within a little bit of his tactics, right? Of like, hey, you're on this team because you showed something that he liked or got you to this point, right? So don't be afraid to lean on those things, right? And if they work out for you, right, and they help lead to the team's success, I'm sure he'll adapt or he'll be appreciative of those things, and maybe it'll give you more freedom. So that balance between, hey, here's the system, but here's my style, here's my thoughts, right? And how can I kind of tinker on the edge of what the coach is asking versus like what I can bring to the game to improve myself and help the team win.
How frustrated are mentees these days, whether it's having to do with style, not, being able to have be stuck into a structure as opposed to imagination? How frustrated are mentees about their current situations where you get to help them these days?
Yeah, sometimes, and I think that's it's few and far between where I think that mentees are like, hey, this coach stinks and I, and being held back, which is great, right? And more so of, they're having individual, not issues, but, things arise that are, they're losing their confidence or they're trying to change teams and, it definitely occurs. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I think that and that's a good thing, right? Where we want to have kids taking ownership of like, hey, if things aren't going my way, it's not always not your fault.
Yeah.
Right. We have to take some ownership where it's like, okay, what can I do a little bit better? How can I improve myself? Even if you think that, you know, you're not in the wrong and you're doing everything right and you're the best on the team or whatever. Right. Taking that step back of like, hey, even if that's the case, what can I do better? Right. How can I improve?
And I think that, you know, you look at a situation like that for a mentee, and it's part of the growth process. While yes, you can sense yourself that you're growing and you're expanding, it's about bringing others along with you, and it's that making sure that everyone gets as much out of the experience that they can, even though there are those at different levels of success and levels of understanding the game. Yeah,
totally, and that's. That's the toughest thing for coaches, right? Of like, and even teachers in school, right? Of like, you know, how do you bring up the bottom but also helping the top players get better and learn more, and also have them have some ownership of bringing, you know, everyone else up as well. And that's, you know, where the leadership comes into play. And, you know, and that's where you see good teams, they're able to do that a little bit better.
Yeah, and I mean, that was, you know, what I was trying to figure out here, because, you know, you want to have, and this was brought up by Modiflow on the Twitch pitch, you want to have love of the game over knowledge at a young age. You want to be able to go out there and enjoy what's going on, and then the byproduct of enjoyment is, oh, okay, I can be a good, you know, I can be a good six, you know, and I know what a six can do, and I can do all these different things. But you've got to understand and love the game first, and then grow from there to figure out, okay, here's my piece and where I can benefit from it, where we all can sit there and learn at the same time.
Totally. Yeah. The love of the game is by far more important, right? Because, you know, we can try and motivate our athletes, whether we're the coach or the parent. But ultimately, if that motivation doesn't come from within at some point, then they're not going to be able to, you know, get to that high level. And so, and that intrinsic motivation only comes from love of the game.
Have you sadly come across those mentees or athletes around you that the love of the game is waning, and you've got to try to remind them about what they got into in the first place, why they enjoyed it? How many mentees or folks that you get to touch, whether it's electronically or in person, how many do you have to kind of remind about why they got into it in the first place?
Yeah. And a lot. And it's not always because they've lost their love.
Yeah.
They've forgotten that they love it. And then they've forgotten why they got into it is because they love it. And the more that we can get back to loving it and having fun and enjoying being out there, the better we play, right? Sometimes we just get so caught up in like wanting to play well and why aren't I playing well, and putting pressure on ourselves and getting that pressure externally, that we forget like, hey, if you play with a smile on your face and enjoy being out there, right, and caring a little bit less about the mistakes, right, the better we play. And I know that usually the better we play, the more we're having fun. You know, so it's kind of a balance there, of course, but we definitely stress like, hey, why did you get into soccer? Why did you start playing? And reminding them, hey, yeah, still, the number one goal is to enjoy yourself, even as professionals, right? Where it's, you can get caught up in the rat race and it's like the daily grind. Oh, the body's not feeling good. Oh, it's 95 degrees out. Oh, we're in a losing streak. Oh, this, oh, that, right? Oh, you're a professional athlete that gets to play soccer and have, you know, and do that for a living and be with buddies and hang out and all this stuff. Like, put a smile on your face and enjoy it.
And I think that it sometimes is difficult for younger players who see a future for themselves in the sport about reminding themselves not to put as much pressure, because we all put pressure on ourselves no matter what, whether it's day-to-day life, what we're trying to accomplish at home underneath the, you know, the walls at home with family and all these kinds of things. I think that sometimes the younger generations put too much pressure on themselves, and they have to be reminded, okay, yeah, pressure can be a good thing, but too much pressure and doing it yourself creates too many negatives and too much of a hill that you've got to climb out of. There's a difference between pressure and putting too much pressure on yourself at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the biggest things that we encounter and that we talk about, right? Especially when we're talking about tryouts and, you know, showcases and big tournaments and playoffs and all those types of things. And that balance between, okay, how can we use some of the pressure and to generate, you know, that fuel and that energy, but relieve some of it as well of, hey, you know, you've earned it a little bit, and, you know, life will go on. And, you know, as important as you think this might be, right, that there's, this is just part of the steps. And, you know, I think that we play that clip that Giannis Anka, whatever he said.
Just go Giannis with the Bucks. We know where you're going.
his end of the season presser is one of the things that, you know, what he said in those 2 minutes was unbelievable and so well said. And we use that a lot of like, yeah, there's no such thing as failure. You know, you're taking steps, you know, and it's the same thing. Like I think about Atlanta United, right? That first year we made the playoffs and we lost to Columbus. Right. It wasn't a failure. It was so important that we made the playoffs. And would we have won year two if we didn't have that? Probably not. Right. And so that was just part of the journey. You know, and when you kind of have that mind frame a little bit, it takes some of the pressure off.
So, all right. Since you opened that door, that's how we'll wrap it up this week. Atlanta United, one of the most high powered, if not the most high powered offense in Major League Soccer, but at the same time, one of the worst defenses right now when it comes to goals allowed. First off, Brad is a beast coming back after 4.5 weeks for something they said. Brad, you'd be at 10 to 12. Four. No. How about 10? No, four. And Brad's back between the sticks. When you look at Atlanta United right now, I know a lot of folks sit there and they go, yeah, it's like Big 12 football, like Texas Tech or Oklahoma State right now on a Saturday. But what do you see?
Yeah, the same. You know, it's tough. I mean, to give up a goal in the first minute and the last minute, that's,
yeah,
I mean, and still get a draw, honestly, is great. You know, because, you know, had I said that before the game started, you'd give up a goal in the first minute and the last minute, you think, well, we lost that game. Yeah. You know, obviously Brad is just an animal. The way he's coming back at this age, especially from these injuries, is just incredible. I can't imagine doing it. You know, I think he'd be the first to say, like, he wasn't a great game from him. You know, but I also think he's an uber competitor. So I wouldn't expect that he comes out and is like, you know, goalkeeper of the month. Not that that's a thing, but if it was, I wouldn't be surprised if he earns it for June. Right. So he's going to take that one and own it and know that he can be better. But yeah, it's been disappointing. The goals given up for sure. You know, and the good thing is you're scoring goals, and usually it's a little bit easier to try and figure things out defensively and stop those things from occurring and preventing goals than it is if you're struggling to score goals and create them and put them in the back of the net, because it's much more difficult. So I still am bullish here on the season in the long run, but there's definitely things that can be corrected.
All right, what's the latest with beyond goals, my friend?
This is our quiet period where kids are kind of just past tryouts, taking some time off, which has given us time to kind of look at the big picture stuff and get organized for the push in the fall. So we're taking this time to work on the course information that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago, and you know, see if we implement some new things in the fall and get ready for our grander partnership with Atlanta United.
Exactly. At MF Parkhurst on the Twitters, at BG Mentoring, Beyond Goals Mentoring. Cap, as always, great to catch up with you and Greg every single week to talk about mentoring and impacting youth and all these kinds of things. Very, very cool. Thanks for putting up with my questions every single time you come on the show.
Always great to chat, John. And I do see the comments on the side. I do want to get to a Huntsville game. I think RippleWorks is probably a sponsor for them at some point, Soccer Knots. And so I will get down there for a game in Huntsville. I'm excited to do that. Appreciate the Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo, yes. And as always, right there. This reminds me, I have to talk to your head coach right there.
Oh, that's right. You know, maybe I'll bring him on with me in 2 weeks.
Oh, that'd be pretty sweet. So, yes, right there. Rhode Island FC, I have the gear. You've made me poor. I hope you're happy. Cap, as always, great to catch up with you, my friend. We'll catch up with you in a couple weeks.
And enjoy the weekend.
All right, be good. Michael Parkhurst, that is it for hour number one.